The Rob Akey era is unbeaten. Hello, everybody. My name's Matt Bagley. I cover Oregon State Athletics for Oregon State Beavers on SI, and I talk about the Beavs every week on this podcast, aptly named State of the Beavs, where I break down all the big stories and the ins and outs of the Valley Football Center and the rest of Oregon State Athletics. We got a lot to get to this week. That opening win for Rob Akey over Lafayette, FCS school. There's some good, a W, some bad, who did it come against, and some unknown. What happens next? Because the Beavers have a bye week. We'll talk about that as well. And I want to break down a committee that was just announced yesterday that I think could make a big impact for Oregon State's football future. We'll also share Rob Akey's post-game presser because it's a bye week. He hasn't publicly spoken with the press yet. And a really unfortunate story in women's basketball. And then I'll wrap up with my five games. So without further ado, let's get into this. Orange and black get the dub over Lafayette. Going into that game, the big story was the change at offensive coordinator. Offensive coordinator Ryan Gunderson was relegated to quarterback's coach, and senior analyst Danny Langsdorf, who had been assisting Gunderson, really a consultant role. I like to think of it as a expert relying on his mentor, because that's what Danny Langsdorf was for Ryan Gunderson. Danny Langsdorf took over and started calling the plays. Langsdorf was Mike Riley's offensive coordinator at Oregon State from 2005 through 2013. Then after a year in the NFL, he went back to Mike Riley at Nebraska for the same gig, offensive coordinator in Lincoln from 2015 to 2017. He has deeply close personal ties with Beavers offensive line coach Mike Cavanaugh. For those who know, I believe the story goes he donated a kidney to Cavanaugh's wife back in the day. So they're really close friends, really deep ties in that family. And I think that was a good thing for Danny Langsdorf. I think that was a good thing for Oregon State. You have a coordinator and a offensive line coach, essentially a run game coordinator, who can work in lockstep together. And while fans panned the move, or I heard some folks grimace and some roll their eyes, because Danny Langsdorf was known for being overly simplistic in his time in Corvallis. Honestly, I think the Beavers needed this. I think a simplistic scheme on offense, is it perfect? No. Okay, that's easier for defensive coordinators to crack the code if it's simplistic. But by being simplistic, it keeps the players from overthinking or getting too cute. And I think that was a foundational problem for Oregon State this year. We never knew who they were. Are they the team that is going to feed Anthony Hankerson and live through the success and failure of their star tailback? Or is this a team that's going to spread it out five wide and let Malik Murphy run his air raid? Oregon State didn't know who it needed to be, didn't know who it wanted to be. I thought they got a little too cute at times, and I think Danny Langsdorf coming in with a clear, simplistic identity was pivotal for this offense. That wasn't the only change heading into this game. We knew that there would be a change at defensive coordinator. Trent Bray, obviously, no longer calling those plays. So it was a shared role between defensive line coach Ilesa Tuiaki and secondary coach Rod Chance. Tuiaki was Kalani Sitake's defensive coordinator at BYU for six seasons, 2016 through 2022. So you have some connection there. You have some experience there. It's not something where you have a coordinator promoted above his capabilities, way in over his head. This guy knew what he was doing. This guy had done it before. I thought that was big for Oregon State, because I've said all year, as much as I like Trent Bray's philosophy, aggressive, pressing, man-to-man defense that empowers talented, physical defensive backs to just play free, there's not a lot of complexity in that scheme. It's a complicated scheme in terms of the requirements, the physical requirements, right? You need guys that are big, strong, fast, tough, and can play the football, okay? That doesn't grow on trees. You need the Richard Shermans and Cam Chancellors of the world to play that kind of scheme. Or as a Raider fan, the 83 Raiders had two Hall of Famers at corner, Lester Hayes and Mike Haynes. It helps to have the best ever to play that kind of scheme, a really aggressive pressing man defense. I believe in it philosophically. I just don't think Oregon State has the players to play that philosophy, and I think Oregon State needed a fresh set of eyes that could say, hey, true freshman corner Trey Glasper is a good player with a bright future, but he's getting torched every Saturday, and say, hey, JUCO transfer Jaleel Tucker is a really talented corner, and he's a great story, working hard to make his way back into the upper echelons of college football after leaving Oregon to go JUCO. Great story, but he's getting torched every Saturday. And Kobe Singleton coming in at nickel, bless his heart, okay? He had a brutal injury last year that prevented him from being cornerback one in Corvallis. Great story. He's getting torched every Saturday. Let's make it a little bit easier on these guys. Let's give them some safety help. Let's mix up our coverages, throw in a little bit of zone sometimes, and see if that helps our corners. See if that improves our pass defense. Doesn't have to be all the time, but just a little bit, right? And I think bringing in a fresh change there had a positive impact on Saturday. The other big change, and this is something I'm really curious about going forward. Mark Kreiner came to Corvallis to be Trent Bray's defensive quality control coach. Last week, he was named the interim linebackers coach. Who is Mark Kreiner? Mark Kreiner was also Rob Akey's defensive coordinator when Akey was the head coach at Idaho from 2007 to 2012. So the two men have a history. I wouldn't be surprised if Rob Akey and Mark Kreiner implement some of their philosophies and their beliefs in what a winning defense looks like over these final four games in Corvallis. I was really eager to see all three of those changes on display, and I think we saw them, right? Oregon State gets the win, 45-13. It didn't look like that at halftime, though. They trailed 13-10. Here's three things that stood out to me. One was Van Wells was out. And I don't know why. The program has been mum about injuries, and that's one thing that I think Akey will continue from Trent Bray. In terms of what it meant on the field, I saw a lot of plays where the quarterback center snap exchange looked off, especially when Jabari Johnson took over. The backup center was used to Malik Murphy. And Malik Murphy is significantly a taller quarterback than Jabari Johnson. He's about 6'5". Johnson's about 6 foot. So some of the snaps that went high for Johnson probably are just fine for Malik Murphy. But it throws Jabari Johnson off because his hands all of a sudden are up by his shoulders or up by his eyes when he needs to hand off the football. And it screwed up the timing on a lot of read option runs. I think the Beavers had a great game on the ground, but it could have been an even better game if the quarterback center snap exchange was more dialed in. And I'm interested to see, given the bye week, will Van Wells have time to get right again so that this team can get ready for Wazoo and potentially, you know, take off offensively. Another thing that stood out to me in that first half, I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be the bad guy. I said the same thing with Trent Bray. I'll just get this out really quick, as polite and positive as I can. I like the young man's character. I love that he came to Corvallis and committed to playing quarterback at Oregon State. It was a big move for Malik Murphy. But Malik Murphy is not a Oregon State starting quarterback. He is not the guy. I think it was clear and obvious to everyone, this team looked different when Jabari Johnson took over in the second half. And Ryan Leaf talked about it on the CW broadcast. The ability of Johnson to run the ball it's not simply that Jabari Johnson can break off a couple runs. I actually don't think that element of his game is very sustainable week to week. You have to factor in who he was doing that against. This happened against an FCS school, Lafayette. The real impact of what Jabari Johnson brings with the run game is Jabari Johnson forces defenses to play honestly. The defensive end has to take that read option seriously now. They can't just pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. They knew Malik Murphy's never going to run. They knew Malik Murphy's not good when he leaves the pocket. He's not good when you get him on his feet. Malik Murphy likes to be a statue back there. He's kind of Marino-esque, does not like to move his feet. Jabari Johnson can move his feet. Jabari Johnson gives them that element. He might run the ball. He might take a keeper. He might boot out to the flat. There's a lot of different things Jabari Johnson can do that Malik Murphy can't, and defenses have to account for that. I saw a clear, marked difference in what the Oregon State running game was able to do once defensive ends had to account for the threat of the quarterback run. And then while this team is trailing, okay, it's 13-10 Lafayette at halftime. I got to point out that the math might say Lafayette was the better team, but my eyes showed me Oregon State was more physical. They were breaking tackles. They were blocking. They were rushing the passer effectively. We saw several times where the Lafayette quarterback, DeNoble, was just throwing it away, heaving prayers. We saw deep shots that were well covered down the field by the Oregon State secondary. And I saw a team that even though they trailed, I thought they got this. They were just bigger, better, faster, stronger the whole game. And I'll give Ryan Leaf another credit here. He said it best. The second half showed the difference between the depth of an FCS program and an FBS program. Oregon State is not a good program this year, but they still are an FBS program. They still have more scholarships than an FCS school, and they have more depth at this level than an FCS school. The Beavers subbed players in and out. Lafayette simply didn't have the players to do that. They didn't have guys in their second team and their third team that could hang with Oregon State. So they kept their first teamers in, and those guys got tired out as the game went on. In the second half, you saw Anthony Hankerson bust free for a career night, his first 200-plus yard rushing game at Oregon State, and Oregon State's first 200-plus yard rusher in a game since, get this, Jermar Jefferson helped Oregon State stun the Ducks in 2020. For his time, Hankerson also earned 4 touchdowns, and Jabari Johnson, wow, okay? I'm going to tell you right now, I think you have a quarterback controversy in Corvallis. But I also am curious. I genuinely don't know the answer to this. Is what Jabari Johnson did sustainable? Like I said earlier, I saw a really mobile, quick runner do some awesome things against an FCS school. Have we seen Jabari Johnson make those kind of plays in any other game this season against any other foe? No. No, we haven't. So I don't know long-term, is what we saw from Jabari Johnson something that we can expect going forward? And I don't know, you know, what will it mean for Malik Murphy? What will it mean for Oregon State in the transfer portal? Your guess is as good as mine. All right, I know the Oregonian is writing that the experiment is over, and you know all the recruiting outlets, I'm sure, are waiting with bated breath to get you that piece if he ever does jump in the portal. I don't know what's going to happen there. But I wonder, was this simply just Oregon State overpowering an FCS school? For 1 week, I think you say, okay, Jabari Johnson gave them a spark. If I were the head coach, if I were Rob Akey, I am pushing to start Jabari Johnson out of the bye against Wazoo. But if it goes wrong, I think you'll have your answer to where Oregon State is going forward. Let's talk bye week really quick. Okay, quarterback change, I already hit on that. I would go with Jabari Johnson. I'm curious where you would go. For me, it really comes down to that extra oomph in the run game and the fact that I just have really, really been soured on Malik Murphy's accuracy. I'm so tired of the mistakes, the bad throws, the should have been picked passes, the poor footwork, and the just blatantly obvious defensive game plans that everybody has schemed up for him. Pressure just tears him to shreds. And I just think it really hurts what Oregon State wants to do offensively. How did you feel about Danny Langsdorf taking over? Did you like that? Do you feel good about that long term? I said earlier, I like the simplicity. I like the identity. And to give you a sense of what I'm talking about, the fact that Oregon State was willing to run the ball early and often with Anthony Hankerson, with Cornell Hatcher Jr., with Jabari Johnson, I thought that reestablished what this team really wants to be. Under Malik Murphy, I have seen way too many passes, way too many third and nines, third and tens, or more, and I don't think that's Oregon State football. I don't think the Beavers can win that way, as they showed by going 0-7 and trailing 13-10 at the half before making that move to Johnson. I like Danny Langsdorf taking over for the rest of the year, and long term, who knows? Maybe he stays in Corvallis, depending on who takes over. As for Ryan Gunderson, I think Beaver fans have to accept this is probably the end of the road for him. You don't take a demotion and then just take that on the chin like nothing happened. I think he's going to look for a job elsewhere, and I think he still has friends in college football. This is a coach that worked for Chip Kelly. This is an Oregon State alum, so if Jonathan Smith stays in East Lansing, he might end up on that staff. He's got some fallback options. It's just not going to be in Corvallis. And then with the bye, every school uses their bye week for one thing, and that's recruiting. Coaches are going to hit the road this week. So I'm really curious what they do about quarterback. We've talked about Deegan Rose decommitting and then committing to Fresno State. That was supposed to be Oregon State's gem of the class and a future quarterback in Corvallis. Saladin Alaa's injury, I thought, looked bad. And even without the injury, I think he's been supplanted by Cornell Hatcher Jr. So I'm curious if the Beavers look for a running back this week and see, you know, what that looks like from a scouting and recruiting standpoint. And then just getting better on defense. Can you find defensive linemen, linebackers, corners? I don't think Exodus Ayers is going to spend another season in Corvallis. I've been saying that all season, just given everything that happened and given the fact that we still haven't seen him suit up, even after the special protective order, SPO, kind of like a restraining order, was lifted. Even without that kind of hanging over him, he still hasn't played a game, which tells me there's still some issues keeping him off the field in Corvallis. I don't think he's going to stay at Oregon State. So you've got an opening there at starting corner. Who's going to be that guy? I think the coaches have to look at the recruiting class and they have to keep an eye on the future because they have some glaring holes on this roster. And that's really what I have on the game and on the bye week. Now let's get to Rob Akey. He hasn't spoken with the media yet this week, and frankly, I think with the bye, he's not going to. So instead, I'm sharing some comments from his post-game presser. Here's Rob Akey, Saturday night, talking with the media.
Real quick, and then we'll start with questions. Coach, whenever you're ready.
Well, how y'all doing? Well, I tell you what, I'm happy. I'm happy as can be to see these guys smile, and they were able to, and it was cool. And I was glad to see the way that they responded, because they got, we were in a battle at the beginning of the game, and it was frustrating for them, and you could see things in their eyes, and the way they came out and battled their tails off and fought to finish their jobs and found out that they could have the success that they were capable of and started making plays. And then, you know, we talked about it in here a few days ago. You get a little spark lit, and if you can get some gasoline on that thing, it can make some things roll. And so I'm just happy for those guys. They're smiling and they're happy and they're feeling good. They got to play the game that they love and smiled and finished it the way they wanted to. So that's the biggest thing that I'm excited about. And That's what I got for you. So what you got for me?
Coach, you feel like Barry's earned the right to be the starting quarterback moving forward?
I think we got good quarterbacks. I thought you were going to ask me if Tua should have been the starting quarterback. No, I think those guys did a great job. They battled their tails off, and I think we got two guys that have battled to be able to be worthy of being the starting quarterbacks, and we got to keep the competition going and keep them working well together. I think they've done a good job of working well together, and we'll continue to make it grow, and we'll always evaluate it as it continues to progress.
It's been a little bit over a decade since you were a head coach.
Has it been that long?
Sorry. Being a D1 head coach again, was, you know, there an oh shit moment for you, kind of in game day responsibilities and, you know, maybe some things you forgot about or the stress of the moment, things of that nature?
Well, I don't know if I would say it quite like that, but, you know, going back into that role and needing to be able to play that role because I've done, you know, paid attention to some different things and, you know, had to pay attention to the role of orchestrating the game and doing things in that fashion. And, no, it flashed back to me, and those were things I tried to make sure I worked to manage throughout the course of the week, and it got kind of more comfortable as the game went on, and so it's something that it was a quick flashback, I guess, put it that way, and it felt comfortable. It'll continue to feel comfortable, and the biggest thing of all, I'm really, really proud of this coaching staff. And the way they responded to take care of these players, it was awesome the way that the communication was today and the things that they were doing for the players. And I can't emphasize that enough as we went through the way that this week progressed and putting their attention towards helping these guys have their success and find a way. You know, you can look at anything any way you want to. You can see the good, you can see the bad. We found a way to find what can happen and where the opportunity is. Opportunity could be now here. Well, it was, and they took advantage of the opportunity, and it came, you know, the players did it. We all stood on the sideline, but I think our coaching staff did a hell of a job helping those guys get to that point. Now I'm fired up about that.
Hank said maybe in the first half played down to the level of the competition a little bit, was frustrated by that. How do you, did you agree with that, and how do you break out of that in the second half?
Well, I would say that we didn't play very well in the first half, but I think it was in the parts, and that's what I wanted. That's what I talked to the guys about at halftime. You know, we had a nice extended drive, and we made something happen, and then we didn't finish some things, and we didn't. Some of it was finishing some blocks. I'm talking about it when we were on offense, you know, and just make sure we take care of the ball. On defense, we had done some very good things, but then there was two third and forevers that you know, we enabled to be able to be converted. Now we took the ball away and we did some things there. There was too many penalties for my preference, especially in the first half. You know, we got to be better clean with our hands. You know, that we got, what, three holding penalties on defense in the first half. And then we had an emotional penalty. We just kind of focused on, you know, they got a chance to see everything that that they needed to at halftime. But the communication that we had was just, hey, pay attention to things that have been good and what you're capable of doing. Wipe all that other stuff away, because the frustration was there and you could see it. And so I don't know if you say play down to the tension. Those guys were sky high and they were fired up to play against us. But I don't think that, I think we played. And then when some things happened that was bad, well, there's a mountain of bad has happened to us already and it had to be overcome. So you got to fight through that. And that's where they did in the second half. They fought through it, and I think that that's the biggest thing of all. And then when the success started to happen, well, now we could go and we could continue to roll. And I would like to think that that could help us as we move forward. You know, it's just the beginning. But it was, they need to be able to crack through that wall, if that makes sense, what I'm saying to you. And so I don't know. I think they took some good steps, and you know, we've got to continue to move forward and get ready for you know, the next opponent's a little better than these guys were. And these guys fought their tails off. It's a good football team, you know, and we were able to overcome them.
Coach, two players that were mentioned as far as, you know, their voices having an impact was obviously Anthony Hankerson, Aiden Sullivan. Both of those guys, including Hank, obviously firing the guys up coming out of half. How crucial were their voices to turning this thing around in the third quarter?
I think they were huge. I really do. Hank, he's one of our captains, and our captains were anointed by the football team. Their players, you know, their teammates told them that their voice mattered to them. So, you know, I think that's an awesome thing with Hank. And you don't have to just be a captain to be a leader. And Aiden provides a lot of emotional leadership in the way that he plays. I think that's a spark that was good for some things. I think that, you know, when they hear things from Hank, and I think our other captains did a great job of things too. It happened throughout the course of the week. district. I met with the captains before we even got the whole team together on Tuesday when we got ourselves started. And, you know, they need to have some power because their teammates told them they got power. And so we've got communication between us. And I think that that has helped things as we went on. So I think those are two great guys that obviously it showed and did some really good things tonight. And I think that there's a few more of them that now that they've been able to taste success and have some fun and had fun playing the game they love and made some plays they found that they're capable of that maybe they didn't make before, well, that's how you make it happen again. And I tell these guys that all the time. They've heard it from me a million times, and they're going to hear a million more. If you can do it some of the time, you can do it all the time. We got to make it a habit. If it's a habit, then it happens a little bit more often. So that's a longer answer than you probably wanted, but I think those are two great voices, but I think there's a few more in there if we can keep it rolling.
Did you see the shirtless students up at the end zone that were going crazy in like the first quarter, second quarter? That were, it was just like 200 guys swinging their shirts around.
I can't tell. All I saw was on the field. I don't look up in there. So tell me what happened. There was a bunch of.
Yeah, there was just. They did it at Oklahoma State earlier, but today, Oregon State fans, there was a bunch of guys. Students just went up there, took their shirts off, whipping them around.
I think that's awesome. That's Beaver Nation, man. That's cool. I'm glad to hear about that. I might have to take a glance up there next time and look for it. Hopefully there'll be more of them.
Rob, your team leaders fired up their teammates at halftime. How about you? Did you give a Newt Rockne at halftime?
No, I wouldn't say it happened because of the players. The players did a good job. All I did was try to point out some things that I thought they had done well and some things that I thought they didn't do well and how they could make it be more better. And I might have said it with an elevated voice, but they said it to each other, and they went out and made it happen. It's because of them.
The second half, you guys, I think you got about 400 yards total offense. Talk about the offensive line. You got some guys dinged up, so it's not at full strength. What kind of a job did they do?
Well, I think they did a really good job, and I think you saw it develop as the game went on, and that was my message to that group was the fact that to keep pounding and overcome these guys, you know. You need to go out there and take the field. I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm tougher, and I don't care if we're playing them or the Green Bay Packers. That's the attitude you need to have and go about it that way. And I think that they kept grinding and grinding. And I think they were able to then break it and make it work to our advantage. And I think it's because of the way they went about playing.
Coach,
Nico.
I know you already sort of referenced it, but I want to go in a little more detail if we could. The past 2 weeks have been a whirlwind, a lot of changes, especially on the coaching staff this week in particular with a different play caller and you stepping in as interim head coach. A lot of teams that could sort of lead to more issues down the line, but you guys, I mean, you made it work, especially in that second half. Tell me about that coaching staff and how you guys were able to create the production on the field that we saw, especially in that second half, given the changes leading up to this game.
Well, I think you look at it, you got, you know, we're professionals, and this coaching staff is professionals. And you know, what goes into doing this is more than just what people see out there on the field. You know, we're pops away from home. We're a lot of things to all of these guys. We bring them here. We coach them. We teach them. We teach them things that have nothing to do with football. And so there's wrenches, and that's where, again, I take my hat off to the coaching staff because, you know, coaches are all going to go home to wives that want to know, hey, where are we going to live and what's the new job going to be, and situations like that all come about, and they've got to be able to channel that and focus, because the thing that's the most important is these players. And so, you know, I think you take a look at these guys, and your profession says coach. That's your title. That's what you do. They embraced that, and they made it about the kids and the players, our young men, and how they could help them be more better. So I think that that's a lot of stress. And like I've said before to some of y'all, you know, we're the ones that are the adults in the room. We're the leaders. You know, we've got leaders amongst the team, but it's our responsibility to lead the team. And I think this staff led their guys and helped them get to the point that they needed to and find where the opportunity now lies. There were some messages that we gave to them throughout the course of the week and being able to, you know, you've got to make a situation more comfortable. You got to find what the opportunity is. You can find bad in everything you do in life. It doesn't matter. You know, y'all tell me, is that half full or is it half empty? Oh, that sumbucks pretty near full to me, okay? And that's the way you got to make it do. And if you look at a situation that way where you find the good, then you're going to impact the people that are around you that are maybe not seeing it yet. And so this coaching staff, I think, helped spark that. Those leaders that we talked about helped spark that. And the way that these guys worked, throughout the course of the week, they got it to that point. And so, you know, I think it says a lot for those guys. And I don't know if I completely answered your question or not, but that's the way we went about it. And I think the group effort that took place was really cool.
Rob, after talking to some of the players, it's kind of evident that you could tell from them that they felt like they kind of got 7 weeks of frustrations out in that second half, and you know, were able, like you mentioned, to build off that spark. Did you kind of see that same thing where guys were just kind of just letting it all loose after the tough season that's been had so far?
I do think that there's truth in that. Yes, you could see it, and you saw it in the way that they played, because it became a little bit more free and not tense. Because when you got the weight of the world on you, you end up being a little bit more tense, because the weight of the world's pretty damn heavy. But when all of a sudden you spark a little success, and now you're doing a little more free. And again, if you just trust your eyes and your training, then good things are going to happen. But when it requires some success to take place with that. Some wins, every play is its own deal. If I can have some wins within the battle, so if I pay attention to this play, you know, yesterday's history, last play is history, the next play ain't here yet. The only one I can affect is this one right now. And if I can do it free-flowing, then I'm going to do it better, if that makes sense. And so, yes, I do think that we saw that go. And that's what we had talked. We talked to the players about it. If, you know, you get the momentum to happen, when it starts to happen, you can make some things happen. You know, and that's what we talked to. Some of us talked earlier in the week. You know, had we finished one of those opportunities earlier in the season, this may have been able to happen sooner for us. Well, it happened now, and that's all that matters. All that matters is the moment is now, and our next opportunity is the next one, and we've got a period of time to get ready for that, if that answers your question.
Last one, Coach, you guys played your best ball of the season the second half of this game here tonight. We saw a lot of Jabari in the second half. Can you talk a little bit about his performance tonight, what you liked as far as how he controlled the offense, was able to improvise with his legs, and could we see a little more from him earlier in the game and not just second half moving forward?
Well, I think you're going to continue to see that, and that's something that we've been working to get done over the past few weeks anyways, just trying to get him more and more involved. And we were able to make that happen more so today, and he took advantage of his opportunity. And that's all I can do, all any of us can do. When we get the opportunity, what are you going to do with it? Go run with it and force your way. Make it play so damn well you can't afford to take you off the field. And everybody should have that attitude towards it. I'm really proud of him, man. He did an awesome job. He sparked some great plays. And he's got some ability with, he's got some ability that people have to deal with, because you can't just worry about this. You got to worry about what he's able to do, whether it's the run game or the throw game. And he made big plays doing that tonight. So that was cool. I look forward to seeing more of it. I think we've got a good crew of quarterbacks.
Thanks for your time.
Appreciate y'all. Go Beavs.
That was interim head coach Rob Akey showing off the enthusiasm. I could listen to Rob Akey read a phone book. I've been saying that for 6 months. Now let's venture into some other topics really quick. I want to talk about the hiring committee that Oregon State announced yesterday and an unfortunate women's basketball story from over the weekend, and then I'll share my five games. So the hiring committee at Oregon State, I talked about this over on my Blue Sky profile. The Beavers had a press release announcing a committee that will help athletic director Scott Barnes hire their next head coach. And that committee includes NFL wideout and Oregon State standout back in the day, Brandon Cooks, former Oregon State head coach Mike Riley, Oregon State alumni John Styrek, who works with the Oregon State University Foundation, John Rishi, who works with Burgerville now, used to be an executive at Dutch Bros, Marty Reeser, take one guess where he works, and Nikki Neuberger, formerly of Nike, now an executive with Lululemon. So you have an Oregon State student athlete turned NFL star, Brandon Cooks. You have an Oregon State head coach, Mike Riley, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4 prominent Oregon State alums in positions of business and in representing the university and understanding the university's interests. What I see in that committee is a desire to keep Oregon State grounded in their next hire. Trent Bray was an Oregon State guy. Jonathan Smith was an Oregon State guy. I think this committee, what their role is going to be is the Beavers have hired an outside firm that will help with leads, will help give them names. Here's who you interview. Here's who you reach out to, that sort of deal. What this committee is going to do is it's going to give Scott Barnes some brains to bounce ideas off of and sort of like a panel, if you will, that can help interview these coaches so that it's not just all reliant on Scott Barnes and his connections. Because if that's the case, then a guy like Matt Wells, Kansas State offensive coordinator, formerly the head coach at Utah State when Barnes was there, a guy like Matt Wells might have the inside track. But if you have Oregon State alum, Oregon State coach, and Corvallis native, Mike Riley, Oregon State alums, John Styrek, John Ritchie, Marty Reeser, Nikki Neuberger, all at, you know, titans in the business world, all looking at this from an orange and black perspective, what I think will happen is Oregon State ties will be incentivized. So a coach like Sean Mannion, who is an assistant coach right now for the Green Bay Packers, I think he has an edge in this kind of committee. A young up-and-comer like Brennan Marion, who can preach about trying to restore Oregon State to where it was and really talk about the recruiting and connecting with athletes, I think he might have an edge with Cooks and Riley. Coaches that have ties to Oregon State like Bronco Mendenhall might have an in with this group. It really is going to come down to, do you understand Oregon State? Do you understand the state of Oregon? Do you understand football and coaching in the Northwest? And do you understand how to win, right? So that's your hiring committee. They're going to help out Scott Barnes any way they can. And I'm really interested to see, you know, what happens with the coaching search going forward. One more story, and then my five games. This broke over the weekend. Oregon State women's basketball wing, Katarina Ferreira, Brazilian national, one of the best Oregon State players in last season's WCC tournament championship team, out for the season. And I really, if you know how to fix that gaping hole in the middle of Scott Ruick's zone defense, your guess is as good as mine. I think he could really use the help right now. I don't know how this defense survives that change, because she was so pivotal defensively into sparking their transition game last year. Boy, I'm going to have a really, really, really hard time picturing them stopping teams without Katarina Ferreira in the perimeter. Now my five games to watch. Saturday morning, UCLA at number 2, Indiana, 9 a.m. on Fox. Why do I have this game down? Because the line's Indiana minus 25.5. Why do I think this is going to be a compelling game when Vegas says Indiana wins by a ton? I want to believe this game can be closer because the Bruins have won 3 straight since firing Coach Deshaun Foster. This is not the same UCLA team that began the season. I want to see what they can do in Bloomington. Saturday, number 18, South Florida at Memphis, 9 a.m. on ESPN2. Memphis dropped out of the top 25 after a shock upset last week by the hands of UAB. However, they can get back in the top 25 and, importantly, seize pole position for the highest-ranked G5 playoff bid. There's only one G5 right now in the top 25. If they beat that one G5 in the top 25. On the other side, South Florida is that team right now, number 18 in the country. If they win out, they will almost certainly advance to the college football playoff. So I look at this as a playoff play-in game. Think about what the playoff would mean for either of these schools. They don't have the TV revenue of the big dogs. The playoff can be their equalizer. The playoff can be their brand builder. This is a massive game for two programs trying to rise. My third game on the list, Saturday, number 15, Missouri at number 10, Vanderbilt, 12:30 p.m. on ESPN. I like watching Vanderbilt, but not as much as my old man. And I got to watch the Commodores just so I have something to talk about with him when we catch up on Sundays. He wants to talk Vanderbilt, 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 Vanderbilt for some reason. It's my dad's favorite team this year. Diego Pavia, their sixth-year senior quarterback, is probably the biggest reason why. Watch Pavia. Watch the Commodores and see if they can keep winning to keep their hopes alive for the playoff on Saturday. Also on Saturday, 12:30 p.m., San Diego State at Fresno State. Game kicks off on Fox Sports 1. It's a bounce-back game for the Bulldogs and a test for the Aztecs. San Diego State is my favorite G5 this year, and I just keep scratching my head wondering how many more wins do they need before the world at large gives them a top 25 ranking. I want to see it happen, but they got to beat Fresno to get there. And my fifth game on the list, Saturday, Michigan at Michigan State, 4:30 on NBC. Look, I've said this before and I will say it again. You are justified in feeling hurt. If you go, I don't want to watch Michigan State. If you say, I don't ever want to care about Jonathan Smith. I understand where you are coming from. I don't think that way. I don't feel that way. And my reasoning has always been, I think Jonathan Smith was caught between a rock and a hard place. He knew that the program he built in Corvallis was going to plummet no matter what he did, because Oregon State lost its conference. Oregon State lost its future without the Pac-12. When Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA, Utah, Colorado, all those schools bailed. Oregon State was left holding the bag, and all those players in the transfer portal era, they did the right thing for their future. They got out. Jonathan Smith saw that writing on the wall. Jonathan Smith knew that was going to happen, and Jonathan Smith got out too. I don't blame him for that. I don't blame him for saying, I want to win. And I can't win at Oregon State. Now, that said, I still follow the Jonathan Smith experience in East Lansing, and it looks rocky to me. They've lost a couple games. I wonder if he's got his eye on UCLA. Because I remember saying way back when, if the UCLA job opened up, I thought that would have been the job for Jonathan Smith, not Michigan State. I didn't buy the Michigan State rumors until he'd already inked a contract there. This is a guy that's from LA. This is a guy that has always coached on the West Coast. I thought UCLA made way more sense for him. It just happened that they kept Chip Kelly about a month later than they probably should have. And if Jonathan Smith had stayed on the West Coast and gotten that UCLA job, I think his career would be radically different right now, and I think Beaver fans might be looking at him a little bit differently too. So I'm curious, does he have an eye on that UCLA job, and is that going to cost his team in a big rivalry game? Also, hey, if things really get bad, would you consider a Jonathan Smith reunion at Oregon State? I'll leave that for you. We'll wrap the pod on that note. This is State of the Beavs. My name is Matt Bagley, breaking down all the ins and outs and angles of Oregon State athletics day in, day out over at Oregon State Beavers on SI. I also want to shout out our other writers like Ben Paul, Kyle Clements, John Sievers, and others. And of course, as always, my fearless leading editor, the great Joe Londergan, and you for tuning in, listening, and supporting this podcast week in, week out. Thanks a ton. Thanks for your help, and have a great week, and go Beavs.